Peace of the Lord be with you. Welcome to the happy Friday in this October day. This is the day the Lord has made. We also want to welcome specifically those of you that are visiting Hope College today that are checking us out. Welcome here. Y'all are looking at lots of colleges, but I just want to say, rain or shine, we're Hope. We're a people of Hope. We show up. One quick announcement, you can still register to go on a spring service project by getting on our website to sign up for that. I got a letter from my friend Karis today. For you freshmen or for you guests, I have an old friend from my grad school days at St. Andrews University named Karis, and she's now the chaplain at Despondent University in upstate Washington in Wantmore County. And she occasionally writes me a letter and lets me know about her thoughts and musings. And I thought this week that her thoughts might be fitted for us here at Hope. So with your permission, I'm gonna read one of these letters. So just kind of sit back and let Karis's words kind of wash over us. Dear Trigvi the Old, fall has arrived on Despondent's campus. The atmosphere is decidedly cooler than September. Students walk to class in layers. The albino squirrels move more slowly after summer of feasting on wild berries, and the long light of summer is now giving way to shorter and shorter days of light. It's as if the world is restricting its energy as it prepares for winter. Fall is the mood of preparation. The past weekend, I put away the screens and replaced them with heavy storm windows. I raked the leaves from my neighbor's arched branches that have fallen onto my lawn. I put the flower beds to rest and the patio furniture in the garage. I actually adore this season. I love the smells of burning leaves, which signals for me the anticipation of basketball season. I love the brisk air that sweeps into my body like energy. I love the rain and how it cleanses and purifies away summer's grime like a warm shower at the end of a long, hot day. But it's the trees I love the most. The grove of trees that line Despondent's campus explode with yellow, red, and orange. These leaves make our campus ablaze like a sunrise as the trees gladly give back the light slowly absorbed from the sunbeams of centuries of summers. And as we stand in awe of the old light, whose majesty still shines with the clarity of a simple elegance, we are once again reminded how impressively and effortlessly the surrounding and rooted objects of creation are, brought forth to highlight how finite and clumsy our best institutional structures are in comparison. Even Solomon in all of his glory, said Jesus, was not clothed like one of these. I wish I was there to experience little Trigvi's first fall. I can't wait till he's a little older so he can experience the joy of a pumpkin patch or the pleasure of an apple donut from Crane's Orchard, or to stand on the edge of a western bluff holding onto a sturdy tree as the storms sweep across Lake Michigan. It was great to talk to Kristen a few weeks ago on the phone. She said that you love being a father, that it suits you. Mind you, she also mentioned that you have no idea what you're doing and that you're doing unrepairable damage you'll pay for later. But she said, you love being in front of someone experienced in the world for the first time. From the pictures you sent, new Trigvi's eyes look alert. It must be amazing to see him seeing for the first time, attempting to discern sights and sounds and smells that surround him. She also said that since he has no words, his only recourse of communication are fits of oohs and ahs that climax in an impressive pitch of an intensity that can only be described as soul-penetrating. I liked how you said in your last letter that you didn't know something so small could sound so loud. And from the looks of him, the little guy has a grin that hooks. I notice it's got a little mischief around the edge, which I recognize as yours, and wears a playful seriousness I see as Kristen's. I hope he has your mischief and Kristen's wisdom. I'm eager to meet him. Kristen also said that one of the changes in your life has required more constraint or limits on your time, that because of the baby, you actually have to say no to things. But what I've been reflecting on is how Kristen mentioned that this constraint has been good for the two of you in your marriage, how doing less sometimes means being more. I've been thinking about the theme of limits as it applies to pastoring my people in the way of Jesus here at Despondent University. Late October is the time of year when the center of gravity begins to shift on campus. After fall break, the ethos of the campus begins to settle into itself like a new building on its foundations. This is the season when I notice students start running up against their bodily limits. After fall break, students start to look tired and wilted like flowers that have been left out in the sun without any water. The late nights, the energy drinks, the caffeine, the irregular schedule starts catching up with them. There are peak seasons that are tough in the school year, and this is one of them. From now until Thanksgiving break, the pace is steady and demanding. This is the season when the cracks are starting to show. Nerves are being frayed at the edges. Demands have been issued and promises have to be kept. A roommate's idiosyncrasies, once cute, now tempt imaginary acts of violence. The vapor is suddenly due. There does not seem to be enough time, and the masks people put on to give first impressions are taken off like a Halloween costume. I like this season because people start being more who they really are. I've been thinking about this partly because of a conversation I had yesterday with two students who are dating, Elizabeth and Jacob, who wanted to chat down at Life's Hard Cafe, where the motto is, "Life's hard, have a cup of coffee." Elizabeth came to Despondent excited and eager to plug in. I like her a lot. She's smart, ambitious, eager to serve. She wanted to study for med school, help people. Lots of good things to get involved with, and she got involved right away. Her calendar filled up. Every inch of her day is scheduled. It's hard to keep up with her because she's busy all the time. She's not only busy, she's under the constant pressure to accept new responsibilities. People notice she gets things done, so she gets more offers to keep getting involved. And she lives in constant guilt and fear. Fear that she'll miss out on something important or let someone down if she ever says no. That if she doesn't accept the invitation, she is letting God down or a friend down or her family down. "Yeah, sure, I can do that," she says. She wants to serve and find her place, be known, be a light. "Yes, sure, I can do that," she keeps saying, not wanting to disappoint anyone. Jacob came to Despondent U wearing the blue hat of ambition. I've seen him in chapel a few times. He thinks God has a place in life, but he doesn't take it too seriously. What he does take seriously is his future. He doesn't want anything to get in the way of his plans. He is driven, but he's driven to the point that he lives in excess. When he parties, he doesn't just have one drink. When he's with Elizabeth, he doesn't want to just hold hands. When he's working on a project, he'll often go all night without sleep until it's perfect. He sees life as a cosmic competition, and the goal of any competition is to win. The harder he works, the more he'll win. And the classroom is simply another arena to score points, perform, and garner recognition. He becomes obsessed not with learning, but with the grade. He drives himself until he reaches the point of exhaustion just to stay competitive. And he has developed well-worn techniques to manage time and his resources and his relationships. As a consequence, he tends to skim the surface of his friends and family and even his relationship with Elizabeth. And that was partly why we were meeting. As I listened, I noticed that Jacob's drive is fueled by deep pride and deep fear. He has pride in his abilities and his drive, but if he's honest, he also lives with a lot of fear of failure. He said to me, "I just feel exhausted. This game never seems to end." Most days, Jacob and Elizabeth put on a confident front. From the outside, it looks like they've got it under control, but as I listened, I noticed that just below the surface, in the inner life, there is a pre-Genesis feeling of emptiness, a dark void of uncontrolled emotional chaos. Most days, Elizabeth says she feels like crying but doesn't know why. "Something is off," she says. Jacob said he can't remember the last time he read a book for pleasure. He used to do that. "I can't remember when I just really laughed, that gut-splitting laugh with my friends. I'm too tired to laugh," he says. "Too tired to read, too tired to be with my friends. I'm just tired. Something is off." Jacob and Elizabeth are our typical type A perfectionist students who are trying to do it all, be it all the time. And I like them a lot. They actually remind me so much of you and Kristen at that age. I see them every day, and I want to say something. I want to give them something, something sacred. I want to give them the gospel. I want to tell them that in Christ, because of the cross, they don't have to perform anymore. They don't have to be afraid anymore. They don't have to garner recognition to be loved. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." I want to tell them that this is true, that Jesus' yoke is light for all who are fatigued from playing the game. And I want to remind them of Genesis 1, where we learn that God creates limits that are celebrated. There is a limit to day and night, to light and darkness, to land and sea. There is a limit to the sky and the heavens. There is a limit to time and to knowledge and even to the body. I want to remind them that the created world requires limits, and these limits are what give form, and form is what makes beauty possible. I want to remind them that to live the beautiful life, the good life, requires receiving our God-given limits not as a burden to overcome, but as a grace that gives our life form and beauty and meaning. It is by living into our natural limits that we find freedom with God and with each other. Of course, Jacob and Elizabeth are caught up in the modern story's blind faith and a vision of freedom that is about overcoming or transcending any limits, whether that be imposed upon by the body or the self, sexuality, the family, the state, or even by God himself. This is the Kool-Aid version of freedom, the freedom that tastes good going down but ultimately kills the soul. We will push ourselves faster and harder than anyone else. Nothing will tie us down. If we just drink enough energy drinks like Gatorade, we'll all be G, like God. Of course, this is folly. We all have limits. Only by embracing God's limits as a gift do we discover the real freedom we have been trying to engineer with a scheduled determination. I want to pastor in such a way that helps my people not only know more, but become more. But how? How do we worship as a community in a way that inspires and forms our desires to live into what God has redeemed us to be, rather than fall prey to the temptation to self-construct who we want to be? How do we form a faculty and student culture in the wisdom that constraint is the secret of pleasure, when they have been blindly indoctrinated to always see constraint or limit as an enemy? Is it not the silence between notes that gives music its resonance? Is it not fasting that reminds us of the delicious pleasures of food? Is it not a solid night of sleep that we experience bodily joy of refreshment? How do I help Elizabeth and Jacob find the life they have lost in living? The best answer I have is to point them to Jesus. Point them to a God who loves them, redeems them, and calls them to stop performing for love so that they can start living in love. But I can't do it for them. Somewhere along the way, they have to make this decision for themselves. My friend, I'm sorry for these ramblings. I'm just thinking out loud with you, but these are my thoughts of the day. Well, Trigvi the Old, I had best get back to working the angles of despondent you, where the grace is large and where the students and faculty shatter our perceived realities and where the trees are above average. Your friend, Karis. I like this letter that she sent, and when I read it, I thought of us, because we just got back from fall break, and the center of gravity is shifting. And as it shifts, we enter into a season where we've got to live into the demands and the promises that we've made. But as we do that, live into them in such a way that God's grace frames us, so that we're not doing our studying or our teaching out of a performance anxiety, but out of love. And in love, we find the freedom that makes life worth living. With that, my friends, I encourage you to step into this weekend with joy, with hope, and above all, with love. Go in peace.